Hey folks, welcome to the Lifetime Body Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and this is episode number 68. And I am here, as I so often am, with my wonderful, amazing, and incomparable co-host, PK. What do you say, PK?
I say good morning. I am very excited about this episode, and that's all I have to say right now.
And I share your excitement for multiple reasons. First of all, hanging out with you, doing this with the audience. Thank you guys. Love you. But you know, our mission here, and we restate this many times, but at the Lifetime Body, the idea that we base everything that we do around is that science can meet common sense. You can achieve optimal health, make your body last a lifetime, preserve your longevity, and achieve peak performance all at the same time, if we do the right thing. So that's really the theme of the show and the mission. And I just love wrapping around that because I think it's such an inspiring topic for all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And today in particular has a lot to do with longevity, but then also peak performance in the moment. So it's really high level stuff.
Yeah. And before we get into that, I have to share. Well, out this morning for, you know, a sunrise walk, a little reset of the circadian clock, and 46 degrees southwest Montana this morning. So the cold tub plunge was wonderful, you know, invigorating. And I had enough time to eat me a big old elk steak before I got on. And I tell you what, I'm not sure I felt better.
Really? So is this, did you cook it this morning or are you just eating some already prepared elk, some cold?
Oh, yesterday I had this beautiful bottom round that I sliced into five or six thick steaks. And, you know, they got salted and a few seasonings put on them and flash grilled. And, you know, I ate like the beast that I am yesterday, but I've got a couple left over in the fridge, one less now. But, buddy, I tell you what, eating the hell out of that stuff is just the way to go if you want to get the highest quality protein and heal your injuries.
Yes. Nice. That sounds like an episode.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's my saga, and I've already talked about that enough to bore listeners. So I will not do that because today, we're going to talk about the right way to train hard.
Absolutely. John, I think this is the right moment in time to do this episode because it feels like even before you sent over what the topic was in the past couple weeks, you know, there is a bit of a, I think it coincides with social media, but then also with entertainment and, you know, especially where a lot of our sort of pop stars and movie stars are training for certain roles. There's, you know, we've got Instagram challenges that involve, you know, physical pursuits and people are videoing everything. So I do feel like the idea of training hard, or at least the impression of training hard, is in the cultural consciousness. And so it's being celebrated. So it's a moment in time to get into this because there's more layers than just, you know, seeing someone go crazy on or much more layers on like, you know, boxing or a 15-second boxing video or something like that.
Well said and well framed. And, you know, the topic of going hard in athletic preparation or fitness, it's a fascinating subject and it does deserve some explanation. We often think of a hard training athlete getting results or someone saying, wow, that was a hard workout. Additionally, we are all familiar with that was too hard or I didn't try hard enough. The purpose of this discussion is to define just what is hard training and then to examine the why, how, when, and who of it all. In listening today, I want you all to appreciate hard training. Of course, when done intelligently, as a necessary and non-optional required part of human existence. Some of you will readily accept this point, and others may have some reservations that we're going to address in a well-measured manner.
Non-optional. I like, so another way to say that is mandatory.
Indeed. And again, I think that is, it's interesting to couch that, and we're going to do it. But before we do, I want to share something else that, again, might be in the minds of the listeners. You're pushing too hard. You're pushing on me. You're pushing too hard. What you want me to be? You're pushing too hard about the things you said. You're pushing too hard every night and day. You're pushing too hard. You're pushing too hard on me.
John, beautiful. Now, was that the Seeds from 1965?
Indeed, that was the Seeds. Back in 1965. And so, you know, when we talk about hard training, I think, you know, folks think about pushing hard and maybe pushing too hard. And so we're going to actually, you know, kind of clarify and clear up on those issues.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started right here then. Just what is hard training then for you?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that we would all agree is that anything that we do in our training endeavors that is challenging in the moment and potentially fatiguing could be classified as hard. But technically, I think we got to take the definition a little further. So this could be, you know, and mostly what we're going to be talking about, very high intensity and low or short duration exercise bouts, or it could even be a very low intensity type of exercise if it's super long in duration. So, you know, you could say, you know, obviously doing, you're blasting something like a lift or a sprint would come to mind as hard. But also if you're out there, you know, cycling and you're, even if you're going 10 miles per hour, if you're doing it for 10 hours, that technically could be considered hard. Now, to be clear today, I want to actually focus on the high intensity effort and short duration bouts of training. So this is the stuff that we all recognize. Heavy, strenuous lifting to max or momentary muscular failure. All of the many variations of high intensity interval training and sprinting. And that's any mode, not just running. So it could include cycling, elliptical, in the pool, etc. Those are the hard training endeavors that we're going to chop up today.
Got it. Got it. So even though there is sort of a wider world, we're going to be focusing on this heavy, strenuous lifting, that high intensity and the sprinting today. Okay. Got it. Got it.
Yeah. And so I would say that often the way the question gets asked to me, so, you know, that's what hard training is, but then there's this, why is hard training important and why should we do it? And how do we get our arms around that? So I'd say, first of all, this type of training, hard training, we're going to define it further, it offers benefits that we just can't get otherwise. So that may be shocking to some, but gains in speed, absolute strength, lactate tolerance, muscular hypertrophy, those are the real gains, brah, if you know what I'm saying. connective tissue integrity, so that, you know, the thickening and strengthening of some of our connective tissues, hormonal regulation, particularly balancing our testosterone or growth hormone, insulin, and many others, VO2 max, all those things are escalated and optimized in the human through intense training, and they don't quite get as good if we don't do hard training. And it also offers, for many of us, a sense of massive catharsis on occasion and accomplishment. You feel like you really did something.
Okay. I think that this perhaps is the, you know, or one of the most important points to get all the things that, to get the things that you talked about at the highest level that you can get them inside your body, you got to go hard. That's when the process, that's when it happens. In other words,
you gots to get after it. You gots to get you some.
You gotta get it. But I wanna just so I think that this is an important point, because you really you need to go there to get the benefits. And I don't know if that's talked about as much. I do think that you know, you talk about gains, getting all swole. That seems to be connected with going hard. But the other things that you talked about, I mean, you know, just to pick one, that connective tissue integrity, again, we've talked about it. It's been a few months, but that's these other health benefits are below the surface, but they're not on the radar connected with hard training, I feel like.
Precisely, the health and fitness and performance continuum is, you know, a lot of these things are very much overlapping. And so that's really a good point for you to bring out. And, you know, I would say, you know, this, you know, getting after it, get you some, you know, going hard is not to be feared. And I want to phrase it this way. It's a natural part of our evolutionary biology, and it actually should be considered a non-negotiable or mandatory, as you indicated, requirement to maintain optimal durability in the modern human beast.
I like that. In the modern, why is it non-negotiable for the modern human beast?
Picture escaping a saber tooth, engaging in battle or play, outracing a storm, lifting heavy rocks or logs. So these things have always been there, but now we need to have modern equivalents because they are requirements on an intermittent basis to keep us ancestrally optimized.
Yes, and as those sort of in the modern world with technology and all of the sort of the civilizational construct that's around us, we don't in our everyday life have to run from a saber tooth, but the body still needs to go hard so that we can be fully optimized.
Fluffing it ain't enough.
Okay, sounds good.
So these brief, intense stressors, they actually, we're made to deal with them, and we need them, and they strengthen the body. Don't break it down. This is that kind of, you know, brief, volatile stress that we can get sometimes from exercise is necessary, and it's different than the modern pattern, you know, of chronic, moderately high stress. So if I tried to use numbers on that, and I'd say, okay, so here's, you know, your primal self, and, you know, your stress level through the day, you're rolling along at about a one, and you're just not feeling a lot of stress. And then all of a sudden, oh, there's that saber tooth incident, which we refer to here a lot. Okay, it's a nine, it's a spike of nine, but then, you know, it fades and it's done, and you're back to one shortly thereafter. Well, this modern thing we have is like, oh no, you're idling along or revving along at like 6.7 or 7.2 all the time. And that's bad. That does break the body down because it never, you know, gives us a chance to recover. But these brief high stresses are wonderful for what they can do for us. And, you know, you just can't be as good or versatile as a human beast as your genetics require if you entirely skip hard training. And I say this to Bubble Boys, you know, they don't actually, proven by the literature, they don't live as long or as happy in a figurative and literal sense. Vigorous equals vitality.
That scenario you just described there about the two different types of stress is just so visceral. I mean, that is... that's going to stick with me, and hopefully the listeners as well. Also, I wrote down a word that you just said there, that volatile training. I mean, we are really, like, we are not joking when we say hard is hard. It should be, and we're going to talk about, you know, what that means in a minute. But let's move on to our next point, because I'm curious, building off of what we just talked about, how does the public at large, how do athletes of many different varieties and active people, how do we go about hard training?
I'd say it this way, intelligently, you know, and that would seem obvious here's where I was talking that way, but, you know, intelligently as a brilliant beast, not as a berserk buffoon. So, you know, a lifetime body, you know, and I say this, I'm describing myself as well. It's no place for idiotic fool's play. You know, we need to be smart about what we're doing for it to be effective and safe. And so how we go about hard training is after a proper warm up. And, you know, and whatever that means for the athlete in the situation. And of course, remember, as you indicated, that everyone is and should train as an athlete. We can do that. We should go about hard training in a progressive manner in terms of, you know, getting there. So build up sets, weights, reps, speeds, you know, to fully get in the groove. And that's a very important thing that I think sometimes gets overlooked. I'm going to come back to that one in a minute because I've got a little bit of a story to tell. We go about hard training using a combination of muscular and neural stimuli to achieve, let's just say, 90%+ output. So that's going to be, I mean, we're going to need to dive into this one a little bit. So, you know, muscular input or stimulation is just that load that's on, you know, what's on the bar or what's, you know, what's the requirement you're placing on yourself in terms of the effort you're going to put out on the bike. Well, the neural stimuli is really, that's what we need when we go hard, because it's that extra little bit. It's that amped and ramped and psyched and pumped, you know, focus and get into it. And that's important. So we want to have both those things. We want to have a challenge, a hard load that we've got to face, but we got to also get, you know, get jacked to face it. And that's where that sympathetic nervous system is valuable for it. It's there for a reason. So some people think, oh, sympathetic nervous stimulation is bad. No, it's not bad at all. We just don't want it to be chronic, like you indicated earlier. We want it to be pulsatile and through the day a few times, perhaps. And certainly when we do a hard effort, it's a pulsatile focus of excellence.
That's interesting. Okay. So I just want to make sure I understand this. So this is the, you're talking about, all right, you put the amount of weight on the bar that is going to take you to a muscular 90% plus of your output. But then you also, the mental connection of actually getting under that bar and the sort of the stress that you're aware of that you're going to have to give that effort is also, it's part of the exercise, like actually getting under there and like staying focused and saying, all right, well, you know, I might need a spotter on this one because I'm going to go to fatigue. That the mental and the muscular work together.
Totally, we're wired that way. You know, so you're wired to fire, and you know, when things get serious, you know, it's on, and you pull from all of your beastliness to, you know, to execute. And so that's really, I think, just a point that I wanted to make, and kind of explaining a little further when you're talking about this, you know, percentage of effort. You know, I'm kind of using 90 plus percent as, you know, a very general or generic suggestion. And output can be measured in numbers of things. Obviously, you know, with weights, we often look at percent RM. And so if you have, you know, one RM is one repetition maximum, it's absolutely how much weight you can lift one time. So, you know, to really get this hard stimulus, you need to be lifting 90% of that. You know, you know, if you lift at 80%, there's some benefits in doing that type of training, not quite the same. Or if you look at weights a different way, if whatever the percentage is, if we take it all the way to failure, so it's basically, you know, 101% effort with the weight, you know, you're going to get that same benefit. So you don't always have to lift, you know, the one RM's not appropriate for every person, but you know, you can do a 20 RM if you fatigue out all the way, and that still is hard. We look at percent max velocity. So in other words, max speed, if we're talking about sprinting, or max power on the bike, max heart rate. You know, we can also use, you know, percentages of functional threshold, lactate threshold, max VO2. It doesn't really matter, but when perceived effort gets above 90%. So, you know, if you're doing something for 10 seconds, it's what could, you know, what's 90% of the best you could do for 10 seconds. Or if you're doing something that lasts several minutes, and actually that's where heart rate can become more valuable for aerobic athletes. Heart rate's not that valuable under a minute because we don't have enough time for heart rate to come up and stabilize. But, you know, getting, you know, this point again, it's like 90% of what your best is, what you can do. That's what we're talking about. So I transition in and say, well, now with these lifts, you know, we're okay. There's one rep maxes. We might have those lower rep sets, you know, 2, 3, 4. Those are great because, you know, we do get that stimulus, and we also can get it with the higher reps if we take it all the way to failure. We may have to use things that we've talked about here in training techniques, like rest pause technique, where, you know, you lift till you get tired, rest a few seconds, get a few more reps, do some cheats, do some forced reps, whatever, you know, that's in the weight training. Now, when we go to the HIIT or the high intensity interval training, that's hot right now. HIIT is hot. And so a mix of efforts and rest, that's really all it means. And so obviously if it says high intensity, the efforts are hard, and then rests are breaks that we take in there. So I what I want to do, if you allow me, is to discuss and defend the Tabata protocol and kind of talk about How that evolved in the lab versus the modern gym interpretations, which might be somewhat crappy.
Absolutely. Let's get into it. Let's start with what is Tabata for an audience member who may not be familiar.
Yeah, so that's kind of named after the founder of the protocol. Izumi Tabata is a researcher in Japan, doing a lot of work on exercise, looking at how can we condense exercise to maximize return on investment and fitness. So I think his original study was published way back in 1996, and this is where I want to explain specifically what it was. That was done on a bike. There was a 10-minute warm-up, and then it was a 4-minute focused exercise period, which was 8 times 20 seconds hard, 10 seconds easy to recover. And then there was a few minutes of cool down and what have you. So the whole thing was about a 20-minute workout. Now, they found, Tabata found in his research that this was actually very effective at increasing cardiovascular fitness and performance in people, actually a bit superior to just doing, a moderate volume of moderate intensity aerobic grinding. He also found that it was a very good metabolic stimulus to rev up the metabolism and assist with weight loss goals. Then later, and I'm not trying to be too historically deep, but over the last decade, in particular, researchers at McMaster University, that's in, I believe, Hamilton, Ontario, so our neighbors in Canada, they've done a series of studies, again, compressing down the hard part even further to maybe add up to only 1 minute. And they've shown that, again, reproduce some of the results in terms of the effects, and also that does improve insulin sensitivity and hormonal regulation in us humans. So high intensity exercise is awesome, and it's proven to be. But what's happened is, the gyms got a hold of this and said, well, nobody's going to pay for a 4-minute exercise session, so let's turn it into an hour-long class. And I've seen some of these classes where they go through that, 4-minute cycle of 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off times 8, as many as 10 times. Mm. And that's totally inappropriate. It's a beat down because it's too much anaerobic training. And it gets into the, you've got some fitness consumers who, they want to get their ass kicked, and they're seeking exhaustion, and they don't feel worthy. And, so there's that going on. And then there's the trainers, and I've even talked to some of them. Shame on them for saying this to me, but they're like, I don't know that much about sport preparation or exercise physiology, but I know I can kick their ass. So I'm just going to, no, that's totally not appropriate. But it's going on all the time. It's even going on some of these kind of syndicated color-based exercise gyms, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But, so that's kind of the deal. And, Tabata, he was a, he is a brilliant guy because, hey, really 4 minutes is the sweet spot with that type of protocol. But what I see, and when I, observe these things, I get a little disappointed, is kind of what I call the Tabata quiver, or the vibrating people, because what happens is, that original protocol was done on a bike, and a bike is a pretty safe tool. There's not a lot that can go wrong. Mm. Now you start doing this Tabata protocol using weights, using calisthenics and other things, and exhaustion starts to come in. Movement quality degrades, and it's just ugly to look at. It hurts me because I know that people are at high risk of injury or breakdown. So I don't like it for that reason. What I do recommend is using slightly longer, slightly less intense reps. So, maybe those reps are down at right at the 90%. They're not at 97%. And they might last for a minute or two, and then have very lengthy rest periods in between. So the research is fairly strong that type of training is highly valuable and also much safer. Compressing rest periods, that can be used as a tool, but it's kind of risky business. I think anytime we start compressing rest periods, we compromise quality in the work interval. And here at TLB, we had a show recently, Quality Matters. So, don't move ugly. And there are reasons for having some rest in your interval training. It's not necessarily, noble or tough to to take minimal breaks. And last thing I'll say, I know I'm rambling, but you know, this whole idea of that, you know, we want to think linearly and say, okay, is it, what's your protocol, John? Is it 2 minutes on, 3 minutes off times three? And then of course, you know, not being a total I'm saying maybe, because you know, it depends. If on that third rep, you're not ready to produce the quality effort with the 3 minute rest or whatever I said, then take three and a half. It doesn't matter. And we want to have that expanding rest interval. I think we want to get people embracing that more.
John, I'm glad you went deep on that, because there are a lot of, well, we're talking about the high intensity interval training. A little bit can go a long way. I'm just parsing this just for the man on the street, right? But how you do it and like how long, it really can have hard training while essential. If done wrongly, or if the program is in the hands of someone who doesn't know what they're doing, then it can be detrimental. Like in the case that you just described, an hour of 10 cycles of Tabata will, what it was intended to do, you will not get the benefits, and actually it can be detrimental.
Yep. Don't let your hit turn into shit.
Okay. So there's a lot of wrinkles there. Talk to me about sprinting, and then I have some further questions for you about kind of like everything we talked about right now.
Sure. So sprinting's near and dear to my heart, and really it you could just lump it into high intensity interval training because it's kind of like that, but sure. But it's the highest intensity interval training. So you know, when we're talking about sprinting, and I'll come back to this, you know, I always am an advocate for people doing, you know, running sprinting if they can. But if it's not appropriate, you know, you can do sprinting on the bike, on the rower, you know, on these other things. And so you know, we want to make sure that everyone feels safe and can embrace the concept of sprinting. But literally, it's 5 to 15 seconds. That's it. You can't sprint for 2 minutes. That's not, by definition, it's not possible. So this total recruitment and maxed beast focus of the human, that's, we do get some unique benefits from a few bouts of that. And you know, generally in my recommendations, I'll say, you know, once a week, 1 minute under load. And so if you're doing 10 seconds, that might be 6 10-second sprints on some device. But it's with unlimited and sufficient rests to allow for quality. Because, you know, if you compress the recovery in a sprint, you're not sprinting. And I think that's a nice litmus test for most of us.
I like that. Okay. Got it. So I know that you also wanted to talk about, I do have some questions, but you want to talk about the cool down. What's it look like when you're done going hard in conjunction either with cooling down or with some other training, if you wanted to incorporate that into a session?
Yeah. So we always look at warming up and getting progressively ready to go hard. That's important. That's on the front end of the workout. But on the back end of the workout, maybe to a slightly lesser degree, you know, you want to kind of ease out of it as well. So coming down from that excited and highly effort-based state. So, you know, could be using the same mode like on the bike on the Tabata protocol. They just pedaled slowly for a couple minutes till, you know, the heart rate came down and, you know, mop up some sweat and, you know, get off the bike, do a couple stretches. Good enough, you're good to go. But in designing our workouts and our training programs, you know, you might say, okay, I've got a couple of other exercises. They could be resistance or drill type movements. You're doing it to tune up your body. And then you gradually, you know, ramp down. And I think that's just a point to make. You wouldn't do a hard training session without proper warm-up for safety and effectiveness, but also you should do some amount of cool down, you know, at the end of it as well.
I like it. Okay. So this is my question for you. We just talked about how you go about hard training. What's it going to feel like? Because, you know, what are the type of feelings? And the reason I'm asking this is that maybe it's been a while since you've gone hard and it's going to be individual, but am I looking for, you know, am I looking to go hard enough that I puke? Obviously, I don't think that's a real question, but severe heavy breathing, my heart's pounding. I mean, What would sort of, if you haven't gone in a while and you were describing, someone's like, well, what's it going to feel like when I'm doing this? You know, let's just say, for example, I am doing a Tabata. I'm doing a high intensity. I'm doing, you know, 4 minutes of the protocol where I'm going 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, just because we talked about it earlier and described it. What's that going to feel like if I'm given the effort to go hard?
Man, that's a great question. Hey, thanks for asking it. You know, and I know this is, you know, I didn't, you know, we don't rehearse these things anyway. So I'm just kind of pondering.
Sure, sure.
And I would say, you know, if you kind of listed out, you know, like vomiting, lightheadedness, you know, extremely heavy breathing, feeling like your heart pounding, I think all those things are a sign of smart training gone too far, you know, we want hard training to feel hard but good. You know, it's like, man, you know, okay. You're not in a stress situation where you're fighting for, you feel like you might be dying, you know, it's not quite that. No, you don't have to go that hard. You'd have to go hard, strong, you know, so you feel strong, right. Fast, powerful, and you sustain it, right to the edge, where some of those other things might be happening, but you don't have to go there. And I don't think that we need those negative experiences. And, you know, a lot of people, when they heard this, you know, hard training idea, they're probably thinking back to seventh grade PE class. And, you know, they had to, I don't know, it was a fitness test or it was the run the whatever. And it was a negative experience. And they decided exercise sucks. I hate exercise. It's not for me. And we're going to help you. We're going to bring you back because there is a way you need it. And here's a safe and smart way to do it.
Right. I like that. And so you want to, like going back to an earlier point with the neural stimuli, you have to get sucked up for it. Where you're like, okay, this is gonna take me right to the edge to do these sprints, but not in a way that feels that feels negative. So hard, strong. Okay, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of, that almost gets into this, one of these lifetime body themes is, man, it's good. It's all about feeling good. Now, feeling like a vigorous, you know, sometimes going hard beast, that's natural, you know, but feeling, you know, feeling like you went to the gym for the 10 times Tabata beat down, it's like, that's bad. So you can kind of see the difference. So, and as you can see, there's a lot to consider, you know, and no, given a person's status, their goals, what kind of timeline are we working with? And so this is some of what goes into, you know, the lifetime body work that I do, you know, coaching and training and program design with people. So I, you know, always use that science and my experience as well to customize the fit. We got to get the big three. You need results. You need safety. You need fun. And there's no reason not to have those things. So, you know, if you want to take it to the next level, hit lifetimebody.com, click services. And work with me personally. Just a brief tune-up sometimes is all a person needs. Sometimes they go longer. But we really can use this stuff to max out. And again, max out on health as well as performance. Those things don't have to be, you know, competing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, as someone who is, I'm actually working on a program right now, a new program that John put together for me. And it is... the insight that you can take from sessions like that and then just apply throughout, you know, the course of your week is, it is immense. And so if you have some lingering questions about anything we talked about, because it is so personal, get on there and check out services and, just go explore.
Yeah. Or ping us with a question or comment.
Sure.
They're always welcome and we love it. And so then we, you know, if we go down these, you know, questions that we were asking using the keywords, the next one that comes up is when, you know, like when should we do hard training?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's a good question because especially if we're connecting with that, you know, getting psyched up for it. So we know that we're like, okay, this is going to be, you know, intense on some level. When is the right time?
So the title of this thing is the right way to train hard or something like that, I think. And so you know, the first answer about when we should do our hard training is, you know, when it's right. I mean, when it's right for us, and you have a fresh body that you know is ready to go hard. So never force it. You know, if the body's not fresh that day, it doesn't matter what you, you know, schedule should always be flexible. And so we never want to go hard until our body's ready to absorb it.
You know, John, but this is interesting to me because this could be one of those things where, you know, you got to be straight with yourself. Because if you, you know, it's going to be hard and then you're sort of like getting psyched up for it. And you're like, actually, I just don't want to do it. So maybe I'm not feeling quite up. Like you need to have that. You need to be honest with yourself assessing, because if more often than not, you're saying, ah, my body's not quite right, then you're just, you're BSing yourself. You're avoiding the difficult workouts.
You know, that can go both ways. You know, there's that whole, finding ways to look forward to and embrace and get into, you know, the effort and, you know, separating out, you know, how the body is functioning versus some things that might be stuck in the mind. So we kind of have to play that game.
Sure.
I would just caution folks to say, gosh, you know, if you get going and you're warming up and you're getting some signals that it's not that you're, let's say, lacking motivation or sure, lazy, perhaps, that it's, you know, you're just flat. So that's actually a pivotal moment where, you know, you've got some of this garbage that's out there, you know, in the Instagram fitness community and other places where they're like, okay, now you got to get tough and you're weak and you got to pump yourself, you know, to do it. Well, I disagree with that, because if the body isn't fresh and we know it, again, try to be distinct here.
Sure, sure.
You can override temporarily because we have that mechanism in our body. You can pump up a bunch of stress hormones and get your adrenaline and cortisol going, and you can actually rise up and get that workout done. But guess what happened? You tried to do a 9 workout when your body was at a 7, just using these numbers. So you got the workout done, but you probably won't absorb much of it, and you may have actually extended your recovery in the process. So you're not a workout hero. You're a game day zero if you do that stuff.
I like it. Okay. When are some other, like some like benchmarks about when hard training is appropriate?
Yeah, I'd say as a small proportion of overall training volume in most cases. So even though we've got age and we've got specific sports or interests, for most all of us, we don't want to go hard all the time. In fact, a little bit goes a long way, and that's really a great thing to know. So if a person is, say, you know, just generally working and interested in maintaining, you know, health and fitness, we really want to look at the minimum effective dosage. And, you know, I've got some recipes that I use in the Lifetime Body System as far as, you know, what the literature says. I've studied a lot, you know, like of this kind of exercise, what's minimum, blah, blah, blah. But if I was just to say a couple minutes of high intensity exposure once per week can get you a lot of the way there. So that's really nice to know. We did all this talk for, gosh, you know, a half an hour about training hard. Now I'm saying just do a couple minutes. But, hey, that's consistent with what Tabata said too. So good to know. Now, if you're, let's say, training strategically, you've got some really focused athletic goals, you know, a few times per week, a few more minutes, again, is entirely appropriate as long as we're not exceeding the absorption limits of the body. So that's what I call, you know, versus minimum effective dosage, just a pharmacological term, we have maximum absorbable dosage. So,
got it.
You know, again, the motivated folks sometimes, because they're so motivated, they just want to pile on more and more in the hopes that, you know, it's going to take. But we have to look at how they're recovering, and there's certain markers that we monitor to make sure. And so you always want to get your dosage of intensity or hard training right for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
I can feel myself. I mean, I'm long-winded today. This is a meaty show. Maybe it was because I ate that meat this morning like a beast. Yeah.
John, I'm just absorbing. I am just absorbing this information. You know, this is like for what you just said there, you know, once a week, a few minutes a week, there's actually a lot to sort of, you know, take in. And so, and I think that maybe what you're hearing on this end is I'm thinking about how it applies to me personally. You know, I'm thinking, okay, what does this mean? And that does take me to the next topic, because, you know, I'm thinking about myself personally. The audience is probably making the same sort of connection there. And so it leads me to ask you the question, who can do hard training? Like, let's talk about the individual and how hard training applies to us and how we can think about that.
Yeah. And actually, this relates because, you know, who can do hard training? If I kind of look at that athletic model, you know, before I dive into this too deep, I would say, you know, that the who and the when fit together where, you know, in an athletic model in a postseason, you know, a person really doesn't need to do a lot of intensity training. They may be doing recovery. And then in the off season, it might be a small amount. And then in the preseason, that's when they're doing it. And then when they're in season doing their sport, a lot of times that is the intensity or the hard. So depends on the competition frequency, but there's some,
for sure.
I just didn't want to leave people with the thought that you have to be static and consistent all year long. That's not really how we roll here at TLB, because we want to be natural beasts flowing with the seasons, and that does you know factor in. But sorry for rambling. I'm meaty today. Who can do the hard training? Well, most people can, there are some caveats here. Not absolute beginners to training. That's not appropriate. The systemic and the connective tissue stresses of truly hard training are too great. And I'm going to say it this way, and I say it this way a lot. You have to earn the right to go hard. In fact, allow me to repeat that. You have to earn the right to go hard in training.
You got to, you can't just go hard out of the box if you haven't been training.
No, because the risks are too great. You know, we need to get the body ready to, you know, kind of reach this upper level of the pyramid, or, you know, I'm going to say sure. Icing on the cake, but, you know, cake at TLB, you're not supposed to eat much cake. Okay. But it takes a minimum of several months of preparatory work to do like that Tabata protocol, for example. I would not use that for an untrained individual. I think there are some either orthopedic or even cardiovascular risks that can presented. So we want to be smart about how we do it. Also, I would say, sure, most people can do hard training, but not anyone who is currently ill or exhausted or sleep deprived or immune system compromised, kind of like what we went back to earlier. Sure. You know, you got to be fresh, and, you know, don't drag yourself into an abyss of negativity. That's just, that's a self-loathing behavior. We don't need to have that. And then, you know, lastly, I'd say on that, this is not anyone who's injured, or at least not in a way that directly loads the injury. And so, you know, last week I was talking about, well, you know, I've got an arm that's in rehab, so, you know, you won't see me doing a lot of bilateral heavy lifts. It's not possible for me right now, but I guess that doesn't mean I can't use my legs and locomote like a mofo.
John, this is what's popping into my head hearing this, is that oftentimes I think, especially when, you know, either I've been inactive or gone through a period where I'm sort of trying to get myself back into things, this is, you know, a younger version of myself, you say, all right, you know, someone says, hey, come to this class with me and it's super intense, it's going to kick your ass, right? And the idea is that, all right, I need a tough workout to kind of jumpstart it. More often than not, it just, you know, it takes you down. You are at risk for injury, certainly, or get injured. You know, that's certainly happened to me. So essentially what I'm taking away from this is you go hard when you're feeling good. And so if you're restarting or starting a new journey and it's connected with fitness or movement, it's the hard workouts are not at the beginning of that journey. They happen down the road a piece once you've warmed your body up and prepared them for them.
Yeah, and you inspired me to say this, that, and I think I say it sometimes, and I believe it was not last week it showed up again, but, you know, ass kicking is a constant in the universe. And so you really only have two choices. You're either kicking ass or you're getting your ass kicked. And so here at TLB, you know, our focus is to kick ass at, in, and for life. And so, you know, we got to put that parameter on the workout. So if somebody says, hey, this is going to kick your ass, like, no, I'm going to kick its ass and maybe kick their ass for a suggestion. But anyway, so really, who's it for? Who is hard training for? It's for those who have put the work in and their movement patterns are highly accomplished. So you should never train with increased intensity or load if you have form flaws. And, you know, we had that show about technique and why it matters. Yeah, I mean, we've got to own our body, our space, our movement. Learn to move gracefully and practice that as an art. And so that previous example I gave about the Tabata class quiver, I mean, it's not just an eyesore. It's an orthopedic risk and kind of a metabolic nightmare. You know, people doing that, they're going to have, hormonal dysregulation, disrupted sleep. It's probably not going to help them with weight loss goals or muscle gain. So we've got to be intelligent about how we do these things.
Absolutely. So let's put it all together. Let's talk about examples, success stories of how, you know, real life folks are using hard training. And, take some of this theoretical and put it in the practical world.
Man, I love that. And we've got a couple of great folks that we've been working with that have allowed me to share what's been going on. And so you'll recall Jim from South Dakota, possibly. He had asked some questions in the past, and we dedicated a show to some of the things he was doing. So Jim's a runner, and he has been, over the past year, working with me on and off in a coaching capacity. And he's been running in races from the 5K to the half marathon. And, you know, we spent some time building up his aerobic base and just doing that kind of low intensity, steady state or low, slow cardio mojo that we like to call it. And we also did some drills and strides and improved his mechanical efficiency. But ultimately, you know, when that foundation was built, we then used the smart application of some interval workouts, you know, running specific interval workouts, that he used to take his fitness to a higher level. And he's established personal bests in the 5K, the 10K, and the half marathon over the summer. And just a nice example of how to, you know, use these tools.
Yeah. So those interval workouts for him, is he doing those on the track? Is he doing those on the bike? Is it a variety?
Well, he lives in a rural area, so he doesn't have access to a track. So most of the training that he's been doing has been either out on country roads, gravel roads, or he has a park available with a grass surface. And so, that's how he's once per week, he's been doing, there's some different protocols that we've used, but you can express it in terms of time or in distance.
Okay,
but
yeah.
One workout he did was roughly 8 times a quarter mile with an eighth of a mile walk in between at 5K goal pace, for example. We've done some things in using time, and so it might be back to what I was talking about earlier, a little bit longer VO2 max stimulating experience. So he did 4 times 4 minutes with generous recoveries in between so forth, so on. But we're not going to keep him doing that forever. You know, a lot of times with these runners, with the use of these kinds of cyclic programs, you build up that base and then you insert these workouts for 4, 6, maybe 8 weeks. And then the body starts to not respond as much and needs to go back into a recovery phase. So we will pull that out. But, again, that's that seasonality effect.
Sure.
But Jim, doing great. And just a good student of his own body. And, I'm learning things I learn from everybody I work with. This works better for you than something else. And let's tweak it here and there. Kind of cool.
Absolutely. We've got a few more examples. Who's next?
This one I'll try to be less long-winded. So this is from Sharon. Sharon's from California. And she's been using sprinting once per week, kind of in that model of 1 minute total. So, had been a fitness enthusiast and a walker, did a little bit of jogging here and there. So we safely got her to the point where she could do 6 10-second sprints on a field near her home once per week. And she used it as a tool to send strong metabolic signals to help her hold on to muscle and drop those last few stubborn pounds that she was targeting. So, you know, I always say here, you know, you can't outrun a bad diet. And so when weight loss or body composition improvement is our goal, you know, that fork may be a more powerful tool than the dumbbell or the running shoe, but we do know that sprinting might be the most powerful of the exercise tools for weight loss.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah. So okay. If I tried to say what happens when you do the sprint,
sure.
This will make total sense. It sends these strong metabolic signals into the body. And it says, you know, the body as though it were speaking, it would say, gosh, you know, you're asking me to, you know, accelerate up to max velocity. I need to keep the muscles for this because this is a muscle driven activity. You know, I can't spare muscle. And then the body's also saying, in order to go as fast as I can, I don't need excess weight. So I got to ballast these adipose cells, you know, lose body fat. And that's really what does happen. Now, it would backfire if we did too much of it, because then we get into that, you know, chronic stress. It's too much. The body's stressing. And so then the body goes into a metabolic panic and it says, oh, okay, wait a minute. You're doing this all the time. I got to hold on to fat because I might need the energy reserves. And in fact, that can even break down and cause muscle loss if you water down your intensity and increase your duration with exercise. And I see that all the time. I swore I wasn't going to go long winded, but I'm meaty today. But, you know, a lot of well-meaning fitness enthusiasts, including a few of my clients that I'm wrestling with. And I have to admit that they still think that they got to grind it and suffer at the gym. And yet they're frustrated that they're not dropping the weight. And that's because I'm telling them, okay, we want lots of light activity and then a small amount of this hard, high intensity,
right.
You win some, you lose some, but hopefully you keep, you know, trying to, listen and learn and adapt the message
sure.
to that everyone can hear.
I love that idea that, you know, what the message is, sprinting, the messages are telling the body to keep this muscle and let's lose that fat. That's a very good example. We have a couple more. These are great. This is, you know, sort of helping take the theoretical ideas and putting them into play into real life people. So keep going.
Yeah, so here's Paul from Montana, long-term client and training partner, and he used some well-planned hard efforts on an occasional to even frequent basis, because he's a highly conditioned athlete, in the weight room this winter and on the track this spring and summer. And he has shaved significant time off his personal best in the 100 and 200 meters, in fact, to the point where he's now competitive on a national level in his age group, and is getting tuned up here in a couple weeks to go to a senior championship meet, and probably will be a podium guy. So it's really cool. At 68 years of age.
Well, that's interesting to me as well, because that's kind of the off season work, and that's a sprinter pushing weights in the off season to get faster on the track in the spring and summer. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and that there's a lot of science right now in that area. You know, it's kind of like this concept of transfer of training. And so it is true that, you know, if you do that incorrectly, weight training can make you slower, actually. But if you use it, again, as a tool, a really smart tool that's leveraged appropriately, and then there's some transitional training, great. He's had some great successes. I'm really happy for him. And then maybe lastly, Susan and Brett, also from Montana, they prepared for a winter, early 2019, Grand Canyon backpacking trip. Of course, you know, here this year in particular, we had deep snow and 30 below in Southwest Montana. So there were some challenges some days to outdoor training. So what they did was they were just bombing and crushing step ups and lunges in their home gym. And really that was one of the things they did to help them get to have a real successful trip and be able to cover all the miles, all the vertical, and not just have, like, you know, a negative experience, sore legs, all that. So, going hard in, those examples, each one strategically gave the result that the individual was targeting.
I like that. Yeah. See, because, you know, when you talk about in the real world examples, that's, you know, we have the result at the end. And in each four of those examples, they going hard paid dividends in the actual, in the performance on a big scope. John, if you had to zoom out, what's the take home message today for someone that's like, all right, Jay-Z, you really got me thinking about going hard. Take it home, really, really, really punch it home.
It's always thanks to Eddie Money. Take me home tonight. Love that song, man. Yeah,
me too. Me too.
So the take home message is, let's just say two things. One, going hard on occasion really isn't an option if you want not only peak performance, but optimal health out of your body. The human beast requires it and actually demands and feeds off it. And check. Two, yep, check. And two, if we mix the science and the common sense, as we kind of got into quite a bit in this discussion today, and we train intelligently, I guess there is no other option, almost everyone can work up to being able to go hard and get these amazing benefits.
Mm. Well, you've convinced me. You have convinced me, my friend.
Cool. So, hey, as mentioned previously, we've got an upcoming show as promised, you know, the give the masses what they want. Operation Booty Jack is coming.
I can't wait. I tell you some of the, and I'll tell the audience this, I've got a little, sneak preview of what some of the techniques are. And I've been applying those in my own, you know, caboose building program. And, I am just fascinated to see this episode roll out and give the people what they want.
Yeah, and so a few updates to say it's right around the corner. The programming is finished, and I'll tell you about the programming a bit. It's you know, basically explaining how to do these exercises, how to put them together into a workout, what's kind of a program, you know, so it's all there. The filming and the discussion is scheduled, and you'll be able to access this information, you know, three ways. You know, it'll be via video, via podcast, and article, so you can read it, hear it, or see it, or all three. And as you indicated, PK, there's four places on the human body where you should be able to crack a walnut. Mm. And right up there, that the first most important one is the glutes. And so, you do Operation Booty Jack. I mean, you're standing knee deep in walnut shells, guaranteed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's be very clear about this. This is Operation Booty Jack is how to develop a strong, beautiful, round, high performing glute area on the bod, man or woman. This is just about strength and roundness and performance and power right in the booty.
Yeah, form, function, fashion, fitness. I mean, it covers all those things.
I'll tell you what.
And I see that a lot. You know, you hear like people talking in the sports world, like, oh, you know, you're not activating your glutes and you're not getting, proper, whether it applies always or not, triple extension or terminal extension or hip hyperextension, you know, you're not getting those things. Or, you know, you get the other side of it. It's like, you know, I just really want my my clothing to fit differently or my profile to view differently from the side. And so, there's a way to kind of stay above board and really just address all those things. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to, we're going to have a little fun as we always do with the walnut talk and the rock and roll. But ultimately, there's the science of proper training.
Stay above board. I like it. All right. Can't wait. I'm excited.
Yeah. So thank you as always, guys, for listening. And certainly thank you, PK. You are the man. And if you're enjoying the content and getting benefits from this, here's how you can support the show and help us keep this thing going. By all means, rate and review wherever you listen to the show. And that's always appreciated. Subscribe to the Peak Performance Update. Just pull up thelifetimebody.com and you'll get a weekly update on some of these items and other news, what's going on. And if you can share that wisdom of TLB with others, thanks. Sign up for coaching or online physical therapy for yourself or refer others if, you know, again, that's really going to be a good fit for you. And pick up a program such as Animal Fit. And that's probably the last thing to say today on my meaty, long-winded day. If you have purchased Animal Fit in the past, on you unlimited free downloads for life. There's some version 2.0 is out. There's been some edits and additions, and man, it's just red hot smoking awesomeness.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Hey, stay beastly.